Hello. Okay. Here's the next lecture in the series, the embryology of the musculoskeletal system. This lecture is aimed at talking about the development of the skeletal system, in particular the skull and the axial skeleton, but also then the development of the limbs themselves, which we have touched on briefly before, and to talk about how the muscles of the limbs, head, and body wall form. Now, this lecture is normally fairly long, so I'm going to skip over the development of much of the skull and the head because this is going to be met when we talk about the pharyngeal or the branchial arches towards the end of this series, which will tie in with your understanding of the anatomy of the head and neck. And if I skip over that, then we should move forward a little bit more quickly. So to start with, then we need to go back to the point at the end of the development of the embryo to 18 days lecture. You remember at the 18-day point we had our three layers of ectoderm, mesoderm, and endoderm, which are going to go on and form the structures of the embryo. And the notochord had formed in the midline of the embryo, beneath the primitive streak and the primitive node. There are some key concepts in the musculoskeletal system, one of which is that embryos of animals, from insects up to man, are organized segmentally. There are distinct segments in the body. The segments can be seen as the vertebrae, as the ribs, as the dermatome patterns that you've seen in the anatomy classes, that sensation from parts of the skin to specific nerves are arranged in distinct segments. And the origins of these segments then are based in the early development of the mesoderm from 18 days onwards. So what happens? In the midline, we have the notochord. In the middle of the mesoderm, either side of the notochord, we start to get cells coming grouped together. So we have a condensation of cells either side of the notochord, either side of the midline, and this is the paraxial mesoderm. Outside this, so lateral to this, we then have some intermediate mesoderm, and most laterally we have the lateral mesoderm. So the paraxial mesoderm is going to give rise to much of our segmentation control. It's going to form what we call somites. The intermediate region will be involved in, say, development of the urogenital system. The lateral mesoderm will be involved in formation of lateral structures such as the limbs. And it's going to split into two layers. The lateral mesoderm will become the splanchnic mesoderm and the somatic mesoderm. Let's remember those terms. We talked about the words viscous, viviscera, splanchnic, and somatic at the beginning of the anatomy teaching. Soma meaning of the body, so somatic mesoderm is going to form structures of the body. Somites likewise is going to form structures of the body, so structures that are either under voluntary control or that we can feel the sensation, or such as if you touch your skin, you can feel that touching sensation. That's somatic. Versus the splanchnic mesoderm. So splanchnic meaning guts of the viscera. So visceral structures, organs, things we're not directly aware of. So the lateral mesoderm will become the somatic mesoderm and the splanchnic mesoderm. So the mesoderm is the big layer. It's going to make an awful lot of structures. If we go back then to the paraxial mesoderm, these condensations of mesoderm either side of the notochord, that signaling center, the condensations become segmented, they become grouped into regular segments called the somites. And this occurs as the primitive streak begins to regress. So the primitive streak regresses from the head end of the embryo, the plate that's going to become the embryo, towards the tail, and as it regresses, the paraxial mesoderm becomes segmented. So either side of the notochord, we have seven somitomeres forming. Somitomeres are the somites of the head, and once those somitomeres are formed, as the primitive streak continues to regress, it leaves behind somites. And every few hours, a new pair of somites are formed. And we can see this from 18 days onwards, 22 days, 23 days, we're getting an increasing number of somites, and the embryo can be staged by the number of somites that have been formed. And this is then somitogenesis. This is a form of organization, of course. So this tissue is being organized by a range of signaling molecules, which I won't mention in this lecture. But there is strong signaling. So you remember we talked about the axes of the embryo, that there is a left to right axis, a ventral dorsal axis, a head to tail axis, and so on. And this is an example then of the head to tail axis. The cells are informed as to where they are, and in response to signaling, they then become organized into these segmented lumps of cells. So what we have, what's in a somite? Well, a somite initially starts to form as kind of a ball of cells around a central space, a central lumen, the somitocele, which has its own cells. So this is an epithelial. It enters an epithelial form, a ball of cells with a space in the middle held in place by a basal lamina. But as time progresses, this structure breaks down and the ball of cells begins to break up. The cells become less sticky. The cells begin to divide with mitosis and they transform back to a mesenchymal morphology. So mesoderm is the cell layer. When we use the term mesenchyme, what we mean is the connective tissue of the embryo. So these cells then become mesenchymal. So the somite breaks down and becomes mesenchymal. And it splits into groups of cells that are slightly different are going to go on to form different structures. So ventrally then, the cells become what we call the sclerotome. Skleros from the Greek hard. So sclerotome, tome meaning, tome is from the word, it's included in the word anatomy. Tome is to cut up, a piece you've cut up, a piece, a chunk. Sclerotome. So sclerotome is a group of cells that are going to go on and form hard tissues, cartilage, bone, etc. Dorsally, the cells of the dermomyotome, meaning skin, myo, muscle. So these cells are going to go on and form muscle and parts of the dermis. They will become part of the skin. And the somite is starting then to become defined. The cells of the somite are starting to become defined. These cells then start to migrate. So the cells of the sclerotome start to migrate around the notochord, and they start to produce a cartilaginous matrix. So they're starting then to make the vertebral body. The notochord is going to run in the center of the vertebral body, and the neural tube is going to be enclosed by other parts of bone. So it will become the spinal cord enclosed within the vertebra. So then we have a somite, and within the somite we have cells starting to become determined. We have dorsal and ventral parts of the somite and medial and lateral parts of the somite. So medial parts of the somite, medioventral parts of the somite in the sclerotome are going to become the vertebral body, parts of the intervertebral disc. They're going to form parts of the rib and other connective tissues. The lateral parts of the sclerotome are going to form the arch of the vertebra, the pedicle of the vertebra. They're going to migrate to form the distal parts of the ribs. And connective tissue in that region. Dorsally then we have the dermomyotome, which is going to go on and form the dermis, the myotome, various muscles, and different parts of the dermomyotome will form different groups of muscles. One part will go on to form the intrinsic back muscles. Another part of the dermomyotome will send cells around to form the muscles of the ventrolateral body wall, such as the muscles between the ribs and the muscles of the anterior abdominal wall, such as the obliques. They will also send cells into the limb to form the muscles of the limb. The axial skeleton then, if I miss out the skull and the cranium, just to mention that parts of the skull form in different ways, and of course we have gaps between the flat bones during development of the fetus, with the fontanelles allowing the skull to move to help passage through the birth canal. So we have some specializations here and what have you, but the bones and the muscles of the skull and the head and the face don't just form from the scimitomeres, they largely form from the pharyngeal arches. And the pharyngeal arches and what have you, I really should leave until another lecture where you understand the anatomy of the skull better and we can tie it in. So we'll meet that after Easter. So let's move on to the development of the vertebral column, which I was hinting at earlier, in that if we go back to the sclerotome, those cells are migrating and dispersing and moving around the notochord to enclose the notochord. An interesting point is that the sclerotome splits into two parts in each somite, and one half becomes rather densely packed cells and the other half is a group of loosely packed cells, and in between the two a nerve appears extending between the neural tube and the derma myotome, and that splits these two groups of sclerotome cells into a densely packed group and a loosely packed group. And the densely packed group of cells of one sclerotome will combine with the loosely packed group of sclerotome cells from the other somite. So these will then form the bones of the vertebrae. So each vertebra takes half of its cells from one somite and the other half of its cells from the next somite. So the bones of the vertebrae are out of phase with the derma myotome, out of phase with the somite. Now this is useful partly because, as you know, the spinal nerves arise from the spinal cord in between the vertebrae, but also because there are many muscles between the vertebrae, and if these muscles are to form from the somites, then this allows them to do so. The somite and the muscles from the somite are essentially bridging the gap between the vertebrae because the vertebrae are out of phase. Of the vertebral column, there is an occipital region that forms, which will be incorporated into the bones of the base of the skull. The cervical region obviously becomes specialized to give us the atlas and the axis around which the head, the skull, rotates. The thoracic region is also interesting because the ribs will actually arise from essentially the thoracic part of the vertebral column, from that sclerotome there. The bone, the vertebra of the sacral region fuse, of course, into a single sacrum. And in the caudal region, we initially have a bit of a tail, which becomes removed, becomes lost with apoptosis and what have you, and those small bones fuse together to form the coccyx. So the cells from the sclerotome migrate to surround the notochord, which is going to form the centrum, which is going to form the vertebral body of the vertebra. But then those cells also migrate around the neural tube to completely enclose the neural tube in bone. And these parts of the vertebra will be the pedicle and the lamina and the spinous process. So the sclerotome cells are migrating around the future spinal cord. If this doesn't occur completely in some vertebra, then we have spina bifida occulta. So we have the spinal cord potentially open with a space in the bone. So it's still covered by skin and muscle and what have you. And the level of the defect will vary, but this is the more common form of spina bifida, in which the bone formed from the sclerotome hasn't completely formed. The ribs then arise from mesenchymal cells lateral to the centrum, and the proximal part of the rib forms from the more ventromedial sclerotome, and the distal part of the rib, so the shaft of the rib, is formed from the ventrolateral part of the sclerotome of the adjacent cranial somite. So those cells then migrate to form the ribs. Anteriorly, the sternum forms as a pair of cartilage bands on the ventral wall, and those cartilage bands will usually converge at the ventral midline, and endochondral ossification will convert the cartilage to bone to give us the sternum. So there are a number of possible and not uncommon anomalies in the development of the vertebrae, ribs and sternum, in that occasionally half of the vertebra may form improperly, and you can see why that occurs now, because the somite on either side gives rise to parts of the vertebra. So if one somite doesn't form one vertebra properly, then half the vertebra is going to be missing, which will give us a skewing of the vertebral column and scoliosis. Occasionally, if the intervertebral discs don't form properly, then vertebral bodies, two vertebrae adjacent to one another may be fused. In the ribs, again, you can occasionally get accessory ribs, extra ribs, or fused ribs, or forked ribs. Usually these don't cause any problems. And occasionally, because of the way in which the sternum forms from these two separate bands, which then come together in the midline, occasionally they don't come together, so a person may have an unpaired body of the sternum. You may have two parts of the sternum and some sort of gap between the two. The intervertebral disc then, which I haven't really mentioned, the notochord is going to run through the vertebral body, so it's also going to run through the intervertebral disc. And the notochord, as well as being an important signaling centre then, is going to persist as the nucleus pulposus, which is a soft central part of the intervertebral disc. Around that, in the adult, the disc is surrounded by layers and layers of fibrocartilage. And these form from, you've guessed it, the sclerotome. Okay, there we go. That's the ribs, vertebra, and so on. If we look at the limbs then quickly, we've mentioned the limbs before. Shouldn't say quickly, actually. I shouldn't rush this. But at certain levels of certain somites, limb buds form, because we have a limb on either side, but only at certain heights. So obviously in this organization, there must be some a level of signaling going on to say where a limb bud should form from. And the limb bud is reasonably close, reasonably dorsal, close enough to the somites, that the somites have a significant impact on the development of the limbs. And early on in limb development, there's a nice, again, organized segmental pattern within the limb bud from these somitic structures, which is a little lost as the limbs develop. But initially, suffice to say that the ectoderm, the outermost layer of the embryo, works with the mesoderm underneath to kick off development of the limb bud. If you take away the ectoderm, the overlying ectoderm repairs itself and the limb forms just fine. If you take away the mesoderm of the limb bud, or the future limb bud, the limb won't form. If you take the mesoderm of the future limb and transplant it to the flank of an embryo, an extra limb grows. But if you take the ectoderm overlying that limb bud and graft it to the flank, no limb forms. So essentially, in early limb development, the mesoderm is the tissue that kicks off development of the limb, is the primary bearer of the limb blueprint. And the ectoderm is important, but is only secondarily co-opted into the system. If we remember, we spoke about axes of the limb. There is an anterior-posterior axis from first to fifth digits. There's a dorsal to ventral axis from the back of the hand to the palm of the hand, for example. And there's a proximal-distal axis from proximal, say, at the shoulder to distal at the digits. Now let's look at the methods by which these axes are set up and these cells within the limb bud essentially know where they are and what they're destined to do, or what they're supposed to do, what their job is going to be. So the controller of the proximo-distal axis is the apical ectodermal ridge. The controller of the anteroposterior axis is the zone of polarizing activity. The controllers of the dorsal ventral axis is the ectoderm of the dorsal surface or of the ventral surface, which is those two surfaces are split by essentially the apical ectodermal ridge. So the apical ectodermal ridge is a thickened ridge of ectoderm on the tip most end of the limb bud. And the cells of the apical ectodermal ridge are most likely synthesizing FGF proteins, fibroblastic growth factor proteins, which signal back to the cells beneath the apical ectodermal ridge, the cells in the progress zone. And it's most likely that the job of the apical ectodermal ridge is to promote mitotic division of the cells in the progress zone. So whilst the apical ectodermal ridge is there, the cells beneath it continue to divide and the limb bud gets longer and longer, essentially. And the length of time that a cell has been dividing within the progress zone is roughly linked to how distal a structure it will go on to form, whether it'll form a humerus, ulnar radius, or one of the phalanges. And there is some interesting literature about this at the moment, which if you're interested, you can review the debate between a couple of different theories about development of the limb in this manner. Suffice to say that the evidence suggests that if you were to do experiments in chick embryos, if you remove the apical ectodermal ridge, development of the limb stops. If you add an extra apical ectodermal ridge to a limb bud, then you get duplication of parts of the wing. If you take the apical ectodermal ridge of the forelimb and graft it to the developing hind limb bud, the hind limb develops quite normally. And if you were to take away the apical ectodermal ridge and replace it by a bead soaked in FGF, the limb bud develops normally. But this is an indicator as to one of the signaling mechanisms controlling development of the limb. And when this signaling breaks down is when we see congenital defects such as extra fingers, extra toes, and that sort of thing, diplopodia. Also, if we were to remove the apical ectodermal ridge entirely, the stage at which we remove the apical ectodermal ridge will affect the number of skeletal elements formed. So the later we remove the apical ectodermal ridge, the more skeletal elements are later formed. And remember, we're removing this apical ectodermal ridge at the limb bud stage before any skeletal elements have been laid down, but while the cells are becoming determined. So the zone of polarizing activity then signals across the limb bud in the anteroposterior axis, and the signaling molecules produced here are detected by cells in the limb bud, and they respond differently to different concentrations as they perceive it of this signal. And the if you were to take a zone of polarizing activity from another limb and graft it onto the opposite side of a host limb, you again get supernumerary structures. So you muck up the signaling. The cells believe they're not yet determined, and they're led to believe they're in a different part of the limb, so they go on and make, say, extra fingers because they believe they're more proximal than they were, or vice versa. Last of the three axes, then, the dorsal-ventral axis. The dorsal ectoderm and the ventral ectoderm produce different signaling molecules. The apical ectodermal ridge marks the border between the ventral and dorsal bud ectoderm. And cells then know if they're more dorsal, then they should form more dorsal structures, such as the nails of the fingers. And if they are more ventral, then they should form more ventral structures, such as the pad of the hand or the sole of the foot. And there's coordination between the three axes, and they're all interrelated and coordinated to develop the fairly complex structure that is the limb. One final process that occurs then is cell death, apoptosis, which I've mentioned before, because of course as the limb bud's developing, we have a paddle, say, as the developing hand, for the fingers to form. There is cell death between the future digits. Those cells die, forming the shape of the adult hand. If this doesn't occur, then webbing remains between the fingers. So how are the somites involved? Cells from the somites will migrate into the limb bud. Much of the lateral mesoderm, that is much closer to the limb bud, will pass to form the skeleton, the connective tissue, blood vessels of the limb, and so on. But muscle progenitor cells, myoblasts from the somites, will migrate from the somites into the limb bud. So somites at different levels will migrate myoblasts at different levels into different levels of the limb. Those myoblasts will be innervated by motor axons that are passing from the neural tube at that level of the somite, i.e. from that spinal nerve, which are also passing at the same level into the limb. And likewise, cells from the dermatome, which will go on and form the dermis of the skin. The somatic sensation of the limb will come from sensory axons passing from the neural crest cells sat at the side of the neural tube, which then will then become linked into the neural tube. So we have sensory axons, motor axons, dermis cells, muscle cells, all migrating from the level of a somite, or the level of several somites at their own levels, into the developing limb bud. So the segmentation pattern that we see in the axial skeleton continues into the upper limb and lower limb. However, as the limbs go on to develop, this becomes less obvious, as the myoblasts will form patches of muscle, but these muscles will come together to form the adult muscles that we see, and the limbs will rotate and change shape and so on. And much of this segmentation is lost, but you can still see some of it if you look in the dermatome patterns in anatomy textbooks. And also if you look at some of the innervation of the muscles of the limbs, for example, you also have flexor compartments, extensor compartments. There's definitely some remnants of segmentation remaining. Okay then, so to finish up, let's talk about the remainder of the development of the muscular system. We've talked about limbs, but to revise, skeletal muscle, cardiac muscle, and smooth muscle, pretty much all of the muscle of the human body forms from the mesoderm. The skeletal muscle, as we've seen, comes from the somites, or the somitomeres in the head. Cardiac muscle comes from the splanchnic mesoderm, so the mesoderm in that region, the visceral mesoderm in that region. And the smooth muscle is usually derived from mesoderm local to the structures with which it is involved. So if we look at the formation of the somatic muscle, the skeletal muscle of the body wall, and go back to the somites, the myotomes, the muscle, the future muscle cells of the somite become split into a dorsal portion, the epimere, and a larger ventral part, the hypomere. And these blocks of muscles on either side, on the dorsal side, these epaxial muscles from the epimere are going to form muscles of the vertebra, muscles of the back, and the muscle cells from the ventral surface are going to pass around the body wall to form the muscles of the anterior chest and the anterior wall of the abdomen and so on. So the muscle cells of the hypomere migrate around anteriorly, around ventrally, and they'll split into three layers. So in the abdomen, these three layers are going to be the external oblique, the internal oblique, and transversus abdominis. And in the chest, these three layers are going to be the internal, external, and innermost intercostal muscles between the ribs. So the somites are then contributing to these somatic muscles at these levels. the somatic muscles, the skeletal muscle of the head, these muscles are largely formed from the pharyngeal arches. We'll leave that for a later lecture, which will tie in with your head and neck anatomy, hopefully. Okay, I think we've covered most things that we want to cover. There's one other thing I'd like to mention is that as these muscle cells migrate towards their final positions, the thing that controls what these muscle cells are going to differentiate into is largely the connective tissue, the mesenchyme that these muscle cells are migrating into. It's the relationship between the muscle cells and the surrounding connective tissue that gives the control for the formation of the adult musculature, the adult arrangement of muscles that we see. Okay, that was certainly a lot faster than the lecture, which took about an hour and a bit. I hope, as usual, that this was useful. As we progress, this will tie in with other lectures. So the next embryology lecture will be the development of the heart and blood vessels. So you'll see how development of the cardiac muscle will largely come from that lecture. As I said, I skimmed over a lot of the head and neck stuff, but they'll be more appropriate to the lecture talking about the pharyngeal or branchial arches. And they've also limited the amount of signaling molecules that I've spoken about in this lecture. I haven't really talked about the actual growth factors and signaling molecules that cause many of the processes that we see. Of course, in many cases we don't know what they are, but in many cases we do. And if you want to read about that, then probably the extent you should go to, unless you're really interested, is what's contained within Langmann's Medical Embryology, the recommended text on the course. Right, that'll do for now. I'll speak to you next with about the development of the heart and blood vessels.